It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 56 from downtown Sydney. And again, if the noise of the traffic in the streets below my office continues to come through, please forgive us. But this week, we're going to begin with something a little bit different. Let's listen to a song that I'm going to be using in a talk later in the week.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of me.
Now, I love that John Lennon song. And this whole idea of truth. Isn't it strange that we live in a world where people who've been teaching for years that there's no such thing as absolute truth are now complaining that we live in a post-truth society? One of the things that I'm trying to do, my talk, by the way, later on is going to be on how we get truth, how we cope with fake news in this world. And that really is what this podcast is about. We're trying to get news that's real, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's not inverted commas on our side or your side or my side when it comes to politics or even faith. We still want to discuss truth, and we mustn't go away from what is true. We believe ultimately that all truth is God's truth. And an example of that comes in the abortion debate that's going on here in New South Wales. Now, I happen to be at the New South Wales Parliament speaking in a room just beside the debate that was taking place on abortion this week. And outside, there was an anti-abortion demonstration. And even when I came out, after it had long since disbanded, there were still hundreds of people there. So can you imagine my surprise when I heard that ABC, the equivalent of the BBC, had said, this is their heading, over 100 attend an anti-abortion demonstration. Now, technically, it's not a lie, over 100. But there was over 3,000, at least the Sydney Morning Herald had that. But you see what's happening there? It's a bit like somebody saying, over 1,000 people died in the Holocaust. Yeah, well, there's a whole lot more than that. It is true that it was over 1,000, but there was a whole lot more. Now, that scene also, truth in terms of the whole abortion debate, about what are we talking about? You see, we are continually told that we are talking about one person's body, the mother's body only. They conveniently forget there are two other bodies. And by the way, somebody took me up on this and said, nah, it's not two other, you mean one other, unless there's twins. I said, no, the father is involved in this as well. So at least two other bodies, but of course, especially the baby's body, because it's the baby who's going to lose their life. Now listen to this clip.
In your view, I mean, if the woman is really stressed about her pregnancy, how do you qualify her? It has to
get more to the point of depression, not just stress. And it fit within my confidence of what we could do safely, I would do that.
Right up until when? Late 38 weeks, 39 weeks?
I don't know.
That you're not comfortable saying?
I'm not going to say that. Yeah. To the fetus, it makes no difference whether it's born or not born. The baby has no input in this as far as I'm concerned.
But it's interesting that you use the word baby, because a lot of abortionists won't use that. They'll use the word fetus because they don't want to acknowledge that there's a life.
I think that it is a baby, and I use it with the patients.
And you don't have a problem with
Absolutely not. A
baby?
I have no problem if it's in the mother's uterus.
That was a doctor in a BBC documentary admitting that he kills babies. Astonishing and barbaric. But that is actually the truth. Abortion is killing the child in the womb. And by the way, again, speaking of truth and non-truth, how about this for a headline? 54 men have given birth in Australia in the past couple of years. 54 men. This is written by people who are intelligent, educated people who are complaining about a post-truth society. Now, in that same issue, we're going to continue. And again, thank you again so much for the feedback. And some of the feedback is really, really helpful. So again, for obvious reasons, this person will remain anonymous, and any names that I use are made-up names, again, to provide anonymity. This is a mother writing in and thanking us for giving a heads-up as regarding transgender and women's sports through your podcast. This afternoon, when I collected my girls from a girls-only football camp run by a championship football club, they told me that there'd been a boy there called Fred. Let's just call him Fred. Their frustration was clear as they identified the clear advantage he had over them. My eldest was particularly disappointed that her team of three had come second in the mini tournament at the end, beaten only by Fred's team. What's more, Fred received the coveted Player of the Day certificate. As the story unfolded on our journey home, I decided to return straight to the club to make a complaint. I complained on the basis of it being a safeguarding issue, toilet arrangements, etc., and an issue of equality. The club actually handled it very well. They'd been ambushed, apparently. They'd take it on trust that Fred, who'd given a girl's name, was a girl. I felt able to make a clear, honest, and consistent case against allowing transgender girls to play football. I was also heartened by the club's response. The CEO seemed to agree with the points I made, and I was clearly concerned for my own two children. It made me realize that raising one's voice does not always result in opposition, and that there are still reasonable people in positions of authority and influence. Well, good for you, and thank you for doing that. And yes, you are right. And yes, what we are witnessing, and what I initially said, to be honest, as some kind of sarcastic joke saying that they're not going to be this stupid. I didn't even think they would, but they have been, and they're destroying women's sport, and they're destroying particularly girls' sport. And you're absolutely right to be protective of your children. Well, let's move on. And let's talk about students going to university. It's the time of year when many of us remember when our young ones, our loved ones went off to uni, when we went off to uni. Maybe you're experiencing that today. Well, I went to a university where we all went into halls and they were very basic, but that's fine. That was part of being a student. You then went to a large flat where six or seven of you crammed into it. But the divide that's occurring in our society more and more is being shown in universities as well. There was a report in the Telegraph this week of university flats which are being offered at up to £37,000. The average is £8,000 a year, but £37,000. These are swanky flats in blocks with gyms and all mod cons, and they're designed primarily for wealthy, or they're being used primarily by wealthy overseas students. Our universities are ceasing to be places of education and are becoming more and more places where degrees are purchased and where there is an incredible distinction between the wealthy and the poor. And here's another aspect of this. This is true in the UK, but especially true here in Australia. Seven of Australia's main universities are dependent on overseas income. Now, one lecturer said at an event that I was at, and I don't know if he was speaking the truth. I find this hard to believe. But this is what he said. He said that they were not permitted to fail Chinese students because the Chinese students were paying for their degrees. I can hardly believe it is as blatant as that. But again, it's what's happened when we've turned our universities into corporations who are there to make money and not to educate. Speaking of education, can I just go back to the United Kingdom and to the incredible story of the vegan Islamophobe? Now, this is a girl, a GCSE student, who was disqualified from her exam by the marker for making obscene racial comments, Islamophobic comments. Abigail Ward, a 16-year-old pupil at Gildridge House School in Eastbourne, who's never been in any trouble and never had any difficulty, was penalized for her observations about halal meat during a religious studies exam in June. She was informed by the exam board that she'd committed a malpractice offense and would be disqualified from the qualification due to obscene racial comments made throughout an exam paper. But all that she did was, as a vegan, objected to halal meat. That was it. And I think she only did it once or twice, not throughout the paper. But some overzealous exam marker decided, oh, I'm going to show that I'm not Islamophobic by putting down this kid as Islamophobic. Oh, just depressing. And if you want depressing, here's Greta's song. Greta Thunberg, she tried to get various rock bands, many of them refused to do a song with her. The band called 1975 did. Let's just listen to a wee bit of it.
We are right now in the beginning of a climate and ecological crisis. And we need to call it what it is. An emergency. We must acknowledge that we do not have the situation under control and that we don't have all the solutions yet. Unless those solutions mean that we simply stop doing certain things. We must admit that we are losing this battle. We have to acknowledge that the older generations have failed. All political movements in their present form have failed. But Homo sapiens have not yet failed.
You know,
yes,
I'm sorry.
Failing, but there is
the notion that human beings haven't failed, around. That the planet is doomed. I mean, I do think it intriguing that the last two mass shooters both claimed that eco-concerns were a major factor in... This is becoming like a cult. Now, personally, I think climate change is real, and I think a considerable portion of it is caused by humanity, and I think we do need to do something about it. I don't dispute that. But, there's a but there. I am very concerned about this cultish-type behavior, and especially this poor girl, because I think she is a poor girl. I think she is being used. Let me just give you one classic example of that. So she's sailing in this luxury yacht so she doesn't have to fly to New York to this conference. And you might be inclined to think, well, isn't that wonderful because her carbon footprint is less and so on. Yes, to get there, but how are they coming back? She's taking six crew. The crew are all flying back. You heard it. Man, it's crazy. Let's get some world news. Just a couple of items. Papua New Guinea, please let's not forget what's going on there. In the past years, it's estimated that around 500,000 Papua New Guineans have been killed by the Indonesian military. 500,000. And then let's not forget what's happening in China to the Christian church. And I particularly want to stress an article that I read about the Chinese Catholic Church, where we're told that authorities in mainland China are continuing to make it harder for children to go to Catholic summer camps and other groups like that. And they've also received a warning or a prohibition on summer camps and on also children even going to church. So let's not forget what's happening to our Christian brothers and sisters in China. We don't face that persecution, but there's a different and more subtle type in the West. Listen just a bit of this from PragerU.
Many people who revere the Ten Commandments don't think that the fourth is particularly important, let alone binding. Once you understand it, however, you will recognize how life-changing, even world-changing, the Sabbath commandment is, and you will begin to appreciate how relevant it is to your own life. The fourth commandment reads, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. Why is this so important? First, perhaps more than any other commandment, it elevated the human being. How so?
For nearly now, all of human history, I think life I should have warned you, because according to YouTube and according to Google, PragerU, and Dennis Prager is a Jewish commentator, conservative politically, and PragerU are finding a number of their videos are either being banned by YouTube or being restricted. And this is one that is restricted. The series on the Ten Commandments is being restricted as being suitable only for mature or adult content. Now, when you think some of the stuff that's shown to kids, and yet this one is being restricted. A video on the fourth commandment, a video on the Sabbath day, the one on murder is also restricted. Because it contains the word murder? No, I don't think so. They've been deliberately going after PragerU. So as I said, it's not persecution, but it is an attempt to silence. Well, let's move on and do something a little bit different again. I love playing chess. I don't know if any of you like listening to chess, but chess is just a great game. And I've seen, especially for children, how it's helped and improved their skills in different ways. And I was delighted to read the story of Alexander Lenderma, who is a young boy from New York, who grew up Jewish and has become one of the top chess players in the world. And he's a Christian. He's also become a Christian. He states, "My goal is to try to realize my maximum potential, my God-given talent, which is chess." And again, I do think we need to realize that we live in this wonderful world where God has given us such a variety of gifts. Some of us are musical. Some of us are sports. Some of us can play chess really well, or just different gifts that we have. And whatever gift we have, we can use for God's glory. Well, speaking of music, maybe, songs of praise. Several of you have sent me this. I saw it myself as well, that in the United Kingdom, the BBC have a program called Songs of Praise, which, as one of its producers once told me, was designed for over 50s in the Southeast. You know, the kind of Harry Secombe type thing. But they try to be with it, and they try to be trendy. And so they have now had the first Songs of Praise, which features a same-sex wedding from the United Reformed Church in Glasgow. Just listen to this clip.
What would you say to those people that aren't quite on board with this?
Jesus preaches about love, inclusion, kindness, compassion. A good lady that comes to this church, she told us in one of our discussion nights, she said, people will change, and don't underestimate older people either. They just need to think about it and they'll get there one day.
Now, this is the same argument that's used over and over again. I have nothing to say about the two gentlemen involved. I don't know them. I cannot comment on them. But the comment that is made about Jesus preaches about love, inclusion, and compassion, and people will change, they're the two things that are always said. The second one, of people change, they assume that they are on the right side of history, and this is what will happen. But that isn't necessarily the case. Remember, in Christ's day and in Paul's day, gay relationships were fairly common. And yet the Bible still spoke out against them. And whilst Jesus is about love, inclusion, and compassion, that doesn't mean that he includes us as we are. In fact, he expects every single one of us as sinners to change. And if we're going to say we follow Jesus, then we follow the Jesus who taught that marriage is between a man and a woman. Now, of course, there's a whole lot more that we could say about that, but it was profoundly sad the way that this is put forward. And let me also say, the United Reformed Church has gone within 10 years from 100,000 members to less than 50,000 members, if that. They've decreased in the past 5 years by over 20%. It's reckoned that by the 2030s, there'll be basically none of them left. When they say they welcome everyone, they're talking about welcoming people to a church that's dying. It's not the church of Jesus Christ. And incidentally, you know how marriage was supposed, or same-sex marriage was supposed to save marriage and boost marriage? Well, not in Scotland, not in my home country. In 2018, there were 27,520 marriages, including same-sex ones, 3% down on the previous year. The number of same-sex partnerships or civil partnerships has significantly decreased. Last year, there were only 65 civil partnerships registered in Scotland, down from the 500 annually before same-sex marriage was introduced. Last year, 979 were same-sex couples, and 9% of those were couples who changed their existing civil partnership to a marriage. Now, let me say that one of the meetings I was at this week, people who thought that they were on my side or that I was on their side, I was actually quite embarrassed because I was there speaking on the subject of cultural Marxism, and there's a link to that in the blog. But some of the people who spoke, to be honest, were quite frankly racist. And I have no desire to be associated with that whatsoever. And they were very anti-immigrant, which is ironic because Australia, if anything, is a nation of immigrants. And I was so impressed by hearing this BBC program where the Yazidis have been welcomed to a wonderful place, named place called Wagga Wagga.
Layla came to Australia with her husband and young child. Earlier this year, she was reunited with relatives she'd had to leave behind in Iraq.
After my family all come to here, I'm very happy in Australia because my whole family here, we all in safe in Australia.
Just take us through who's here.
My four brothers in here, and my two sisters, Swat and Ida.
Starting a new life in the suburbs of an outback city isn't easy. Language is a problem, but there is a healthy dose of neighbourly goodwill from Ian Lockwood, who lives nearby.
Iraqi people moved in two doors away from me, and I went up and introduced myself, and I said, I'm the old bloke, sit on the seat and drink coffee every morning. And he wrote, I met them, and I help as do whatever I can to help.
To what extent is this quite a humbling experience for you?
It
because
is.
These are people who have been forced to leave their homes and to
exactly,
start again.
Exactly. People don't realise what these people have been through. If you spend a couple of weeks with them, you find out very, very hard, harsh. Because I didn't realise all this stuff was going on.
Coming through this way?
Do you know, one thing I've discovered whilst being here is that Australia has welcomed a significant number of religious minority groups from the Middle East. Unlike the United Kingdom and unlike the United States, there are a significant number of Middle Eastern Christians who've come here. And incidentally, many of them were on that anti-abortion march outside the parliament. I actually said at this meeting that I thought immigrants could be the salvation of Western civilization in Australia. It was white, middle-class liberals who were passing the abortion legislation. And largely, significant amount anyway, of immigrants who were outside, as well as many white European Australians protesting against the abortion legislation. Well, let's just do one more item, and this is just a wonderful piece. I would recommend listening to the whole interview from Stephen Colbert of The Colbert Show, being interviewed by Anderson Cooper.
I want to be the most human I can be, and that involves acknowledging and ultimately being grateful for the things that I wish didn't happen, because they gave me a gift.
Well, one of the things my mom would often say is that she said, you know, I never ask why me, like, why did this happen to me? She would always say, why not me? Why would me be exempt from
sure.
what has befallen
sure.
everybody, countless others over the centuries? And I think that's another thing that has helped me think, yeah, of course, why not me? This is mm-hmm. part of being alive. I mean, this is the suffering is the, you know, sadness, suffering. These are all, you know, It's you can't have happiness without having loss and suffering.
And in my tradition, that's the great gift of the sacrifice of Christ, is that God does it too.
Mm.
That you're really not alone. God does it too.
Do you know, it was wonderfully emotional. What punishments of God are not gifts? You said that. Do you really believe that? And they both discuss grief. And you heard what Colbert said. He said, it's a gift to exist, and with existence comes suffering. There's no escaping that. Do you know what? That is true. We have so much to be thankful for. Even in our suffering, there is much to be thankful for. Now, I was going to leave it there, and it'd be nice to leave it there. But I cannot miss this out. President Trump tweeted this week, "Thank you to Wayne Allyn Root for the very nice words. President Trump is the greatest president for Jews. Jewish people in Israel love him like he's the king of Israel. They love him like he's the second coming of God." That, my Christian friends, is what's called blasphemy. It's like he's retweeting something that compares him to God, to Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, but that is just so way, way beyond the pale. I pray that God would have mercy on Donald Trump, and God have mercy upon the American people, and God would have mercy upon us all. But please do not, my American Christian friends, defend President Donald Trump as your champion. He may be used by God in different ways, but he is like King Herod, who boasted, and instead of giving glory to God, he gave glory to himself. And if you look up the passage, you'll know what happened to him. Anyway, going to love you and leave you. Off to do something called The Edge just now. Thank you again for those of you who continue to support this. You can do so at the Podbean fundraiser. Thank you especially for those who pray and for those who send in information. It really is fascinating. God bless you all, and see you next week.